What are you going to do?
As a leader in the mortgage industry, the mortgage specialists proudly offer some of the lowest rates available. When you work with an expert from the mortgage specialists, you can rest assured knowing that you are working with someone who truly cares about you. Are you unsure about which loan option is right for you? By giving the mortgage specialists a call today, they would be more than happy to schedule either an in-home or in-branch consultation. They will get to know you and your finances to learn more about how they can help you with your loan option that is best for you and your situation. To learn more or schedule your first consultation, contact the mortgage specialist today at 877-411-0123. That's 877-411-0123. TheMortgageSpecialists.com.
Living paycheck to paycheck is hard. I'm always trying to cut expenses. Finding out how to lower my energy bills with Ambit is a huge help, and now I'm on my way to free energy.
Start saving today at ipmnation.ambitrabbit.com. That's ipmnation.ambitrabbit.com. You've seen the billboards and heard the radio show. Now it's time to examine the evidence for yourself at stateofcorruption.org. Independent gubernatorial candidate Mike Gill has dedicated himself to rooting out corruption here in New Hampshire, the state of corruption. And it's up to us all to help by learning and getting involved. Watch the videos, see the evidence, hear the audio, and judge for yourself at stateofcorruption.org. Sponsored by the Mortgage Specialists, stateofcorruption.org.
IPM Nation is proud to be sponsored by Uptown Auto Repair, located in Manchester, New Hampshire at 578 Mass Road. Phone number is 603-625-8026. Have you ever heard of a mechanic that guarantees their work? Well, now you have with Uptown Auto Repair, 603-625-8026.
IPMNation.com.
Welcome back. I'm Jen Coffey, your host, and you're tuned in live to Liberty Walk, coming to you from the Uptown Auto Repair Studio. And I'm going to have an exciting guest today. So if you want to call in, lines are open, 617-917-4IPM, 617-917-4476. So my special guest today is actually a host who is also on IPM, but on many other stations, well syndicated, and that is Mr. Ed Opperman. And he is the president of Opperman Investigations, which is a private detective agency. And he's also written a book about being a private investigator called How to Become a Successful Private Investigator. And it's a step-by-step guide if you're interested in that field. He's also, in addition to being a private detective, he's also president of Accurate Information Recovery. Now, this is a company that deals with, like, your computers and your cell phones and basically doing forensics on them, in addition to hosting the Opperman Report, which is syndicated, as I said, also on IPM Nation every Friday evening. And I'm going to bring him on because there's a whole lot more to Ed that's going to get really interesting. And I was looking over some of his bio, and Tiger Woods is in there, Ashton Kutcher's in there, the Clintons, political espionage, faces in the moon, you name it. And welcome to the show, Ed.
Hey, boy, it's scary when I hear about myself. What's with this guy?
I didn't even go through all of your list. I mean, you have a really colorful, interesting life that you've lived.
You know, it's the truth is I have, you know, and it's a lot more fun to hear about it sometimes than to have lived through it all.
Well, you've done you've done marathons, and then you've also done data recovery in investigations into international terrorism. So you have quite the repertoire.
Well, actually, the case with the international terrorism, that wasn't me. That was the guys who first came to work for me when we first started Accurate Information Recovery to do the digital forensics. They had just come back fresh from Afghanistan searching for bin Laden. And these were the guys who had cloned bin Laden's phone. And they came back to the United States around 2003. I guess around 2002, 2003. And they started a company doing digital forensics. And I hooked up with them right away. I saw the opportunity because this was a brand new field back in those days.
Oh, definitely. Now it's a very big deal to be able to do data forensics, which is on cell phones, iPads, computers, you name it.
Oh, yeah.
I know a friend of mine who has passed away, but was involved in doing forensics to catch people who were ripping off people in the medical field.
So it's very kind interesting. Of interesting like in billing, you mean?
Yeah, like, you know, getting in samples and then billing the insurance companies for them, things like that. Bilking the system, saying a patient was there when they weren't.
Accountant over here, a local forensic accountant, who, by the way, is also, she's a big advocate for Black Lives Matter. But she's a forensic accountant that we just hooked up together and been doing some things together with.
So what are you doing there?
Well, say the truth, I don't even remember it. You know, it's been pretty busy the past couple of months, you know?
In as far as private investigating or in everything that you've been involved in now politically, you are very in tune and very involved with a lot of things. And correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you just recently interview some folks that were involved with the DNC National Convention?
Yes. I've been involved in that since the caucus here in Nevada. People might know about the scandal about Nevada, claiming that the Nevada Bernie supporters threw a chair at the convention and all this kind of stuff. But that's not the actual story at all. When we first had the caucus here, and it's the first time I've ever been to a caucus, I just could just look at this situation. I could see it was just so rife for abuse and corruption and finagling. You know that you have a row of people there on laptops. They're volunteers. Most of them are Hillary supporters. The one guy I happened to get online was a Bernie supporter. Then they find out what room you're supposed to be in, and they hand you a card. You know, there's no number on that card or anything. You fill it in with a pen.
Okay.
So, but the thing is, you know, you're in a big school, and your precincts are in different classrooms. So since there's really no accounting of who's on that line or showing ID or what, there's no accounting for any of this.
Huh.
They could send you to whatever room they want. They could see a room that has 49 Hillary people and 50 Bernie people and say, well, okay, my friend, go to that room. You know what I mean?
I've never heard of anything like that. Honestly.
I've never seen anything like it either. And then when you got into the room, again, there was no accounting for anything going on. They had two Hillary precinct captains in there as opposed to one Bernie precinct captain. And then even at the end, when it was time to vote for delegates, and people filled out the little pieces of paper. Again, they didn't even know that we had to hand them in. They were telling us to leave, and I says, no, it says on here we have to hand these in. If I wasn't there, there would have been no delegates from that room.
Wow.
So,
that's
yeah, so
insane.
That's what happened at the caucus. Then when we had the county convention, okay, the Hillary people could not produce human beings for those little pieces of paper that they had counted. See, because they won the caucus. Hillary won the caucus. And Bernie was shocked. If you ever saw the look on Bernie's face and Jane's face when they lost the caucus, they couldn't believe it. When the county convention comes around, they couldn't produce people to match those pieces of paper. So we won. We killed them. We wiped them out. We had more delegates at the county convention, and we won. And they never even changed it on the news and says, hey, Nevada just switched over to Bernie because they have more delegates now. He won Nevada. When the state convention comes around. Oh, by the way, too, before the county convention, here's what happened there. That morning, my car battery dies. So I go online. I say, hey, I need a ride to the convention. I can't get over there. The women who are going to give me a ride I'm talking to them on the phone. I'm giving them directions and stuff. And I hear them talking. And they're saying, oh, you know, we're going to have a sit-in and the police are going to come arrest us. And I says, what's going on? They says, well, we're on the credentials committee. And last night, they had a secret vote. And they voted all the Bernie people off the credentials committee.
What?
So now the next day at the county convention, there was no one there qualified to credential people. Anybody could just come and go as they pleased. So I said, well, you know, if this is going to be a big deal, I'll
That's
stay
insanity.
Here. What's that?
That's insanity.
Oh, you have no idea. What happened
well, no,
here in
I
Nevada
used to be,
was so corrupt.
Well, I was a Republican, and
right.
I'd gone to the New Hampshire State Republican conventions, and there was somebody there checking everybody in. If they didn't recognize you on site, they asked for ID, and people who could vote had a particular badge where other people who didn't have a vote had a different kind. And then they had ballots. I mean, they were paper ballots. I suppose anybody could have messed around with them, but it would have been hard because everybody was in the same room voting. And then the ballots were collected and they were counted. And if there was like a race going on, like, you know, for the head of the party, whoever was running had a representative standing there watching the count. I mean, that's how it's done. Well, that's how it's done in New Hampshire. I can't say that that's how it is elsewhere. So I find what you're saying very shocking and very disgenuine. It's taking away people's votes.
They totally stole our vote. Wait till you hear. Well, anyway, these women, I decided instead of going down there and being a delegate, I would stay home and broadcast when they were being arrested. So we broke in live. A bunch of stations let me break in live, and we broadcast live as they were passing around the cell phone as the cops were going to arrest them at their sit-in. And some Hillary people joined in the sit-in, too.
Wow.
So we prevented them from getting, oh, yeah, oh, this was a scandal over here. So we prevented them from getting arrested, and we wound up winning the county convention. So now we're all excited. The state convention's coming up. This is where supposedly they threw chairs. Now, what happened then was the Hillary people got in there first in the morning, and they held a vote before all the people were even in the room. And the first vote they held was to discount everything that happened at the county convention and start over.
Wow.
Okay. They also had a rule that we weren't allowed to order pizza or bring in to order food and have food brought in. No pizza. The cops were going around confiscating pizza from Bernie people, but the Hillary people brought their own sandwiches and stuff. They knew this rule was going to be there. Okay, it was so rigged. They have no idea.
So were they waiting for people to like drop from not eating?
Yeah, and they had bars. We had open bar. You know, there was cash bars there, so everyone was getting drunk. Everyone, you know. It goes on forever and ever. You know how that thing is. And what happened finally at the end, Roberta Lang, everyone was demanding a recount, and she just slammed the gavel down, ran off the stage, and the cops came in and filled the room. And that's how it ended.
Wow. That's insane.
It really is. But
you wonder why I'm undeclared now? Both parties are nuts.
Yeah, I've never, you know, I'm an old-fashioned leftist, you know, and this is the first time I've ever signed up with the Democratic Party. And I think if there's – I'm really inspired with what Bernie did, and I'm hoping that we can organize those people around him, which is what we're doing here in Nevada at least. We have a really good active group of protesters that show up every week for different events and stuff. They're going to have one of the debates here in town. We're going to have a big event there to protest that.
Well, I hear that Trump hasn't actually signed on to the debate schedule yet. Only Clinton has.
Yeah, he was making some noises today about that. I don't know. The whole Trump thing is just so, you know, I've been in, I can say, I go way back with Trump. I'm from New York, you know. And I'll tell you a funny story. Way back to the 80s, if you remember his first affair with Marla Maples.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The young woman.
Yep.
Okay. What happened was we were out one night because I used to travel a lot, so I used to date a lot of flight attendants. And we were out as a group one night, and they said, you'll never believe who's in our apartment. You know how flight attendants have those little apartments where like 10, 15 people live there because they're not all there at the same time? And they said, you're never going to believe who's in our apartment. And I says, who? She says, Marla Maples. I said, what? She says, Marla Maples, because it had just came out with that ski trip where she got caught with Trump, you know, and she was on the run from the paparazzi. So this is Marla Maples is staying at our house. So I made a joke. And I says, well, let's tap the phones. I says, let's go in there. We'll tap the phones, and then we'll sell it to the National Enquirer. So, but it was just like a joke. I was just fooling around. So a few months later, I made the same joke. But it was in front of some in front of a different crowd.
Okay. Oh, boy.
Some investigators down at the Doral Inn who used to hang out there. I'll tell you, Bo Dietl was there. And I made this joke about, you know, Marla Maples there. I was going to tap the phones and sell it to the National Enquirer. So I guess they ran back and told Trump because what happened was, and they probably sent them a whole file about me, because about a year after that, I was at the U.S. Open. And Trump was down, not even, man. I could have threw a little tennis ball at him and then popped him right in the head. And he spent, every time I looked over at him, he was turned around looking right at me, giving me dirty looks. Okay. So that was my first brush up with Trump. And now I'm banned, you know, by the way, too. I used to get press credentials to cover all the Trump rallies. And I've done a lot of shows about Trump and his connections to Jeffrey Epstein and all of his... All of his con games and the Trump University. I did a bunch of shows. And I have all his documents up on my website at OppermanReport.com. We have a special member section. And I got all the Trump University lawsuit documents. I got them from Steve Brill from Court TV. The guy who founded Court TV sent them to me. Hmm. I got all the – there's a recent lawsuit too in the 90s, a sexual harassment lawsuit. And, of course, I got the most recent lawsuit against Trump, against where he's a co-defendant with Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted pedophile.
Isn't that the guy that's like a level 3 sex offender, like the worst of the worst?
No, actually, he is in reality. Yeah, he's a really serious. Jeffrey Epstein was this billionaire who lived. He had a place in Manhattan. He had a place in Palm Beach, a place in New Mexico. And he has his own island in the Virgin Islands, his own private jet. And he was molesting 3 little girls every day, according to his butler. And the deal you're a judge. Are you a judge?
Me? No. I'm a justice of the peace.
Justice of the peace. Okay. Well, then you can marry me, but you can't.
Yeah, I can marry you in New Hampshire to somebody else.
Okay. Jeffrey Epstein got a deal you wouldn't believe. He did a plea bargain. First of all, the feds got involved, and he hired like Roy Black and all these attorneys. Ken Starr was on his legal team. Jerry Lefcourt, you know, who was a hero of mine when I was a kid. He was Abby Hoffman's lawyer. Anyway, he hired this dream team of lawyers, and they started investigating the prosecutor of the Florida Southern District down there in Florida, and putting pressure on his bosses. They went up to Jeb Bush. They put pressure on him, and they got Jeffrey Epstein a deal. He was supposed to do 18 months, and he did 13 months. With work release, which means he could leave in the morning and he only had to sleep there at night, and he only had to spend all day Sunday there in the jail. And he could get on his private jet and go to Virgin Islands, which he did, and get on his private jet during the day and go to New York. And he only had to do 13 months with work release in a section of the jail where he was the only prisoner, because it was a private wing for him. The whole wing was empty of other prisoners. And on top of that, he had donated $85,000 to that sheriff's department.
That's insane.
It's insane.
That's insane. He did less time than a 16-year-old kid getting caught with pot.
Not even pot, a paraphernalia.
Yeah, you're right.
I know guys did 3 years paraphernalia. I know a kid, 16 years old, got into a fight with his cousin. He was in jail for 3 years.
Jeez.
A fist fight with his cousin.
But this guy can molest people and walk away after 13 months of barely doing any time.
Yep. And he's a co-defendant right now with Donald Trump in New York State for raping 2 little 13-year-old girls. And one little 13-year-old girl named Maria is missing, that they don't even know where she is. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah, so I've been doing a lot of work on that kind of stuff. And that's why Trump now no longer gives me press access to his events.
Huh. Well, how about Clinton? Is she still letting you in? You've done quite a few stories on her, too.
I know. I haven't applied lately. I just applied. I haven't applied for Clinton lately. And she was just here in town. Oh, by the way, too, I'll tell you a funny story, too, man. When Clinton came down and did her rally here, Bernie had did a rally the day before. There was 3,500 people in the arena. They were around the block. In fact, he had to do two speeches. He did one inside and one to the crowd outside. They couldn't get
wow.
in.
Wow.
The next day, we go down to the Hillary event, and I had to wait online. I couldn't get press passes for that, but I waited online with my kid, and we got in there. And I look at the over the door. It says maximum occupancy 600. Okay, the yep. room wasn't even full.
Wow. Was there any truth? Was there any truth to the rumors of them hiring actors?
Oh, wait till you hear this. Wait till you hear this. I'm an eyewitness to this. They brought in union guys, union construction workers with their tool belts on. Okay, they come in little groups of 10, 15 at a time. And I talked to the guy who's, you know, herding them around, because they don't even speak English. These guys were, you know, Spanish guy didn't speak any English. So I said to the guys, the union guy ahead of him, I says, so, you know, what's the deal? He goes, is Hillary going to be here today? He goes, I says, yeah, you guys don't know where you are? He goes, no, we thought we came here for a job.
Oh, no so shit.
And they brought him in from California.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, this is what's going on. Now, at the convention... Oh my! Well, you know, first.
Do you ever feel like you're living in the Twilight Zone?
Yeah, it really is. You know,
it's like we go through the process of potentially electing our representatives from Congress to the presidency, and sometimes you just find yourself sitting there going, "Are my votes counting, or is this whole thing friggin' rigged, and I should just stay home?" I mean, that's how people are feeling.
You know, when I came up in New York as a kid, I had this really good lawyer, you know, and who taught me a lot. He was a Staten Island lawyer. And when I had my – and I asked him one time, I said, what are you, a Republican or a Democrat? And he says, no. He says, I donate to both parties, because then when you need something done, you can go to get it done. So later on, I had a nightclub in Manhattan. And I said, you know, I told the partners, I said, no, we got to give money to everybody. We got to give money to all the parties. And we let them hold campaign events in our space and stuff yep. like that. But you want to know what, man? Even with all the money, they had all of them had their hands in our pockets the whole time we were open. When we were in trouble and we needed help, they didn't even help us. You know, they just looked the other way. Ah, you know, screw you. You know, and we wound up getting evicted from the space. The neighborhoods, you know, the neighborhood watch or community, whatever the things are called, didn't like us. And we wound up being harassed by the fire department and stuff. And we got kicked out of our space ultimately.
That's so much for increasing job markets. Or revenue, well, you know, taxes that businesses pay that go into your communities. It's like people are very short-sighted when it comes to business industries and where they can and cannot operate. You shoot yourself in the foot.
That is so true. You know, in New York State, you know, I had a beeper and cellular phone company in New York State. I was the first guy to go into a mall and sell beepers and cellular phones from a kiosk in a mall. Okay, they actually came down and took pictures of me. RCR Magazine came down and took pictures of my booth. So this guy's crazy. He's trying to sell them out of a kiosk. Wow. Now you see him in every freaking... You'd think I'd be a billionaire, right? I got him every mall in the country. And but the New York State taxes and the sales tax and the utility tax and the commercial rent tax was so freaking insane. I gave up and I left, man. It was just so prohibitive to do business there. Even though now looking back, there's a lot more loose cash flying around in New York than there is where I live now. It was just such a nightmare deal. And once the New York State Department of Finance and Taxation, once they know that you're not like good at keeping track of your records and stuff like that, they come after you every 6 months. They come after you.
Oh, boy.
Fines and, yeah.
So they put you out of business.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, you have been looking into what some people are considering a very suspicious death, and that is Sean Lucas.
Yeah.
And what are you thinking? What are you seeing on that? What's truth? What's fiction? What is there that the verdict is still out? There's not enough evidence to call it.
Well, I got breaking news for you.
It's not reported anyway. Wait a minute.
Yeah. Okay.
I love exclusives.
Yeah. The story with Sean Lucas is, I'll tell you the whole story.
Okay.
Nico House was the president of students for Bernie Sanders in North Carolina. And one day, Nico House notices that the Hillary people have infiltrated the Bernie campaign with shills and with infiltrators that are sabotaging the Bernie campaign.
What were they doing to sabotage it?
Well, down there. Well, they did it here in Nevada, too. I had my suspicions. Like, you know, if you're with the press, they wouldn't call you back. You couldn't get through to anybody. You're offering to help the campaign. They wouldn't take any help from you. One day, my daughter went down there to volunteer at the major campaign headquarters right across the street from UNLV. And there was no campaign staff people in there. It was all volunteers.
But wouldn't that be on Bernie and not on Clinton? This was a Bernie office, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because Hillary was paying off the people in charge of the Bernie campaign.
To close their offices?
No, not to close their offices. No, the office was open, but the people in charge getting paid by the campaign weren't there running things.
Oh, so they just had the volunteers in there, and so then nobody also, can sign up and do anything.
Here, I don't want to make too many local enemies, but the woman here who was running the press liaison suddenly quit the campaign and took everybody's information and didn't pass it on to the next person who took over. So that was a big incident, too. Wow. But Nico House discovered this, especially down there in North Carolina, that when people in the black community, like reverends and pastors and stuff, were trying to reach out to Bernie, they were being stifled. And events were being canceled at the last minute and disorganized. So Nico noticed this. He did an investigation, and he found out that a lot of these people in high positions there were Hillary people. Pictured with Debbie Wasserman Schultz a day before they were hired. Huh. So, yeah, yeah. So he did a great – this kid is great. He's 27 years old. And he went into the military as a paralegal, and then he came out of the military and went to college. So he's 27 years old, but he's had a lot of experience doing investigations. He's really cut his chops in investigations. I'm really impressed with this guy. So I brought him on my show to talk about the thing about Hillary infiltrating. Now we know that's true because of WikiLeaks, okay? So just recently, he hooks up with this law firm down in Florida. As a paralegal, he's going to work for them. And he talks to the owners of the law firm because they like this political activism and stuff like that. And he says, hey, let's sue the DNC. We'll sue the DNC for fraud because we're donating money and it was a rigged system. So they filed a lawsuit against the DNC. They hire this process server, Sean Lucas. Sean Lucas serves the paper. He's films himself doing it. And then what happens is the DNC on August 2nd, they file a motion saying that it's an invalid service. It was improper service. He didn't serve the right person there at the DNC office. And I've served papers 100 times. And what he did looks fine to me. You show up at the business, say who's qualified to receive the service here, bring them down, and they send somebody down to take the papers. Yep. You're done. You know, that's all you got to say in your affidavit of service. And plus, he has it on video. His girlfriend Savannah King comes home to their apartment that night, and she finds him dead in the bathroom. Okay.
Oh, geez.
So now that's what's being reported in the news that everyone knows. You see these memes out there, they're kind of confused, and some of these articles you see online on Global Research are confused. They're calling him the lawyer in charge of the investigation, the lawyer in charge of the lawsuit, but he was just a process server that they hired that day. He was not involved in this any more than that. But the basis of their motion is that it was improper service, and now the process server dies the same day. Now, I spoke to some longtime friends of his today. And this is not reported anywhere. One thing is, the guy wasn't depressed, okay, at all. He was very excited. He was very much in love with his girlfriend. He was very excited about a new business he started, this coconut oil business. Very thrilled about that. He was in great shape. He was a martial artist, okay. And he was a successful guy, too, his whole life. He did music videos, and he was a well-known DJ. So he was a popular guy, too, with a lot of people. Wow. In fact, they just had a big party in D.C. for him at this bar, and hundreds of people showed up because everybody loved him.
Wow.
So he wasn't depressed. He wasn't on drugs. He was no kind of drug addict or anything like that. He was a healthy guy, fit, physical fit. And that's pretty much it. Is that all in my notes here? And we're waiting 8 weeks for the toxicology report, but no one in his family is talking about what could be the cause of death. And even the funeral arrangements have not been made yet. That no one's talking about that either.
Why do you think that is?
Well, they may be waiting to do their own second autopsy, is what I'm thinking.
The family?
Well, that's what I would do in a situation like this.
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah, I would hire my own guys to go in there and do my own autopsy, my own tox screen, all that kind of stuff.
Now, how do people do that? How do people know that they can?
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know you can, you know, and you need to get a good lawyer and a good investigator who can help you through these things.
And that's where folks like you can come in with the investigative skills that you have. And you've got a couple of things going on. I want to make sure listeners know. And incidentally, if you want to call in, if you've got a question for Ed, you can call 617-917-4IPM, 617-917-4476. So I mentioned earlier at the top of the show, if you go to Amazon, you can find How to Become a Successful Private Investigator, a step-by-step guide written by you, Ed Opperman, and you can find that on Amazon. But you've got another website that goes into more in-depth into what you investigate, and that's the OppermanReport.com. And in there's a members section that you have to be a member. If you're not a member, you can't get in. But in that members section, there's more than what you can get on the face value of your website.
Yeah, so, it's extra
and that's
content.
Where you can kind of get more involved in some of these stories, right?
Yeah, we have extra shows that are exclusive to the members section. And it's a whole wide range of stuff. Like I had George Christie, who was the head of the Hells Angels. He's been on a couple of times. Remember he had that show on the History Channel?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cool guy. We got along great. I love him. He does a consulting now, too, for if you get caught up in the legal system, too. He'll consult with you. Melvin Dumar. Remember who got the will with Howard Hughes and they did that movie about him?
No, I didn't remember that. No.
It was this guy. You know what? His story's been looked into by a local FBI agent, too. I got to talk to him. But Melvin Dumar's a great guy. And he says that he was coming out of driving a truck. Up in northern Nevada, where these brothels are. And Howard Hughes was laying on the side of the road in the middle of the night. He got kicked out of one of these brothels, and his pilot took off and left him there. Dumar picked him up, took him back to I think it was the Sands Hotel. And then later on, he got a will in the mail that Howard Hughes left him all this money. And Dumar is a kind of a character, and he got ripped off by everybody. He got ripped off for the movie. The movie won Jason Robards won an Academy Award.
He didn't get paid?
No, he never got paid. The poor guy got ripped off by everybody. And he just had a recent lawsuit, too, that it was really – he had a good case, but he got screwed then, too. The judge was just laughing him out of court. So good old Melvin Dumar. Robert Merritt, who was a confidential informant in the Watergate case. That's a great story, man. He was involved in it's a whole theory. I do a lot of stuff about Watergate. I've had St. John Hunt on my show. Doug Caddy, who was the first attorney for the Watergate burglars. I've had him on the show. And he has a colorful – in fact, I think I'm the only one that ever interviewed him. He's only done like two or three interviews his whole life.
Did you do an interview with somebody that was a Secret Service officer?
Yeah, Gary Byrne. Just interviewed Gary Byrne. He just came out with this book. I liked him, too. I did a lot of stuff with the Secret Service, by the way. I didn't tell him. But, Gary Byrne was a Secret Service agent during the Clintons, and he wrote a book called Crisis of Character. Just came out. And I got to tell you something. He told me that that's the favorite interview anybody's ever done with him because we got into all stuff like the Vince Foster case and Kathleen Willey. I've had Kathleen Willey on my show, by the way, too, and I've done extensive work on Vince Foster. I just had
Vince Foster and Hillary? And I know you've done a number of shows on that. After all of your investigating, what's your take?
There was definitely some kind of cover-up in that park. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. Ken Starr, by the way, too, played both sides of that thing, just like he did in the Jeffrey Epstein case, just like he did with Monica Lewinsky. And Ken Starr has been with the Clintons since Arkansas, covering up MENA, Arkansas, that drug smuggling down there. This guy's been in the pocket of the Clintons his whole career. And the Clintons, you got to remember, Clinton was a prosecutor. He knows the benefit of having the prosecutor in your pocket. That's what he's always done. But Vince Foster, yeah, there's definitely some kind of cover-up there. More than one bullet hole in his head there in the park. All kinds of shenanigans. And there was a witness. I just had him on the show. I forget his name right now. This guy was harassed by the FBI and all kinds of stuff galore for years. And right before the night before his testimony, too, he was harassed. And I'm going to have his lawyer coming on soon, too. And he actually saw who he thinks was the hitman parked in his car there, giving him dirty looks when he went there to relieve himself in a park bathroom.
So he actually thinks he saw the person that was responsible for killing Vince Foster.
Yeah, and he never saw Vince Foster's car there in the parking lot. So Foster's body had to be dumped there.
So your the line of thinking is that he was murdered and then moved and dumped in another location.
Yeah, though they was dumped there in the park. That he wasn't murdered there in the park. Yeah, or it definitely wasn't a suicide.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And also too, the gun. There's a picture of the body there, and it's a different gun than the one that's in the police reports.
Huh.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. well, then.
Yeah, I know. But there's a lot of stuff.
I'm
that
still
doesn't
trying
make sense.
To figure out the whole Kennedy single bullet theory.
Yeah, I've had a lot of guys on about Kennedy too. That's an old topic that everybody loves to cover.
I don't know how many times I've watched the video and it doesn't make sense to me. He looks like he's shot in two different angles that are impossible to be back to back.
Well, there's even people who think that the video was tampered with and altered. Oh. And there's a lot of evidence for that too.
Is altered.
Yeah, because right where he gets shot, there's a big road sign in the way, and frames are missing, and there's a lot of work that's been done on that, very very odd stuff there. Oh, I had a family, the Sheehan family, who lived in Area 51 before Area 51 came there, and they actually lived within the Area 51 gates. They had their mine there for years and years. And they told me all kinds of interesting stuff about one time they were strafed with machine gun fire. A nuclear bomb went off near them one time. And finally they were run off their property by the Air Force.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to live somewhere where they were doing things like that. I'd be like, you can have it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to. I'd be too worried about what being around things like that. Now, we are talking about all this political stuff and the intense investigation you've done. But whatever was it that got you to want to go run with bulls? Because when I say that this guy's got a colorful life, I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up. You've ran with bulls and traveled and done all kinds of crazy stuff. But how did you end up in Spain doing that?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of stuff I don't talk about, too. You got to remember. Not everything's in there. And the first chapter in my book, too, is a little brief a biography of all the stuff. Now, I always wanted to run with the bulls. Not only did I want to run with the bulls, another thing I wanted to do was to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel. And I actually had a friend whose father went to the library and started planning that for us. We were going to build a barrel and everything.
Jeez.
But running with the bulls, let me tell you something. That was a... and I do this in my after show. I tell the whole story about running with the bulls. It, at the time, too, especially, it wasn't contaminated by American tourists going out there like it is now. And it's just a beautiful festival. It goes on for 7 days. And you run with the bulls like 8 o'clock in the morning. You put on a special outfit, a white shirt and a white pants and this red belt, around your waist, and a red kerchief around your neck. And you carry a rolled up newspaper. And they board up the streets in the old part of town. And what happens is, at night, there's dancing and music and people parading through the streets. And then these marching bands come through the streets. And everybody just runs out into you leave your food in the restaurant. You run out into the street and dance, with this marching band for a half hour. And come back and your food's still there. And you pay your check and you leave. But there's a lot of people, you throw up in the street. And you urinate in the streets. You spill wine all over the place because the wine is just flowing incredibly. So the next day, they board up the side streets. So the bulls go down this narrow pathway, and they can't run down the side streets. And it's kind of slippery and slick, from the night before. So there's some corners where the bulls come running around the corner. What's that?
It sounds gross.
No, it's real. No, it's clean.
No, it's okay. Everybody's just puking in the street and taking a piss. That's okay. It's clean.
There's certain corners where there's puke. But there's beautiful gardens, and they clean. They come every morning. They clean out the phone booths and stuff like that, and then the park benches. It's very clean. It's beautiful. The town is beautiful. It's a farm town where they grow asparagus, this white asparagus. It's delicious. And the wine is so good. You can get a great bottle of wine down at like $3. So, but you just got to be careful with the bulls when they turn in the corner because they slip and slide around. That's where they really knock you around and they can hurt you. So I tell you what happened with me. The first day when I first did it the first time, I picked my spot. And if you could get into the bull ring with the bulls, you can kind of, they let goats out and cows and stuff like that. And you can run around and play bullfight. You know, it's not real bullfight with real bulls, but you can run around and play. And so everybody wants to get in there. So there's this big red door where you get into the bull ring. And I'm running down, the bull comes. The bull's just trotting along. He runs right by you, man. It's like big as a truck. It's like a truck driving past into the highway, you know?
Yeah, and I can imagine. Some guys, I'll leave it to that.
I didn't hear you.
You can leave it to my imagination. I'll live vicariously through you.
There's like four guys trying to push their way to get into the – because they're closing the doors on the bull ring. And there's like four guys trying to push it open. And the guys on the inside, these guys are farmers and ranchers and stuff. These are tough guys, tough local guys, and they're pushing it closed. So I come running down with all my might and I try and crash the door and to get in, right? And I don't know any budget. So there's one guy that's half in. I know. There's one guy. He's half in. He's half out the door. So we all kind of say, okay, you know, we'll go. You know, we'll go. So they ease up on the door. He tries to squeeze in. They break his leg in the door.
Oh, jeez. Well, they said no.
I know. But the custom down there is the machismo, you know? So you can't help him up off the ground. You just got to leave him there and walk away.
Oh, no. Oh, jeez.
You can't disrespect the guy. But they have these Red Cross guys, these volunteers, and these white T-shirts with the big Red Cross on them that, you know, come running over to help him and stuff. But you can't insult him by helping him off the ground.
Wow. And you did this more than once?
Well, you do it every day. Yeah, you do it every day. I didn't do it every single day, but I did it pretty much. If it was 5 days, I probably did it like 3 times, 4 times.
How close did you get to the bulls when they were actually running?
Enough to hit them with the newspaper.
Oh, jeez. Now, what is with the rolled-up newspaper? How is that going to stop a truck that's barrel-assing down on you with, like, two knives coming out of their head?
Well, it's tradition, you know? That's the theory. It's this tradition.
It's tradition. Just, like, run faster.
Yeah. But, you know, listen, it was a beautiful time, you know, and I was young and fit and healthy. I was a good-looking guy, you know? And,
it sounds like a wonderful place to visit. I personally would not be wanting to run ahead of a bull.
You don't have to. You don't have to run with the bulls. They have, like I said, the marching bands, and there's a circus was in town with an elephant down the street. There was a little carnival with rides and stuff. There's all kinds of activities going on, and just the festival, you know, just of the dancing and the beautiful women. The women there were so almost. I almost moved there. I almost stayed there. Came very, very close. Yeah.
Well, that's something else, is something that's willing to get you to think about where you're going to live and, like, leave the country. I don't get that. So you did, like, all this crazy stuff. You've done marathons. Did you ever do, like, the Boston Marathon?
No, I ran the New York Marathon. Okay. A lot of half marathons and those little the shorter triathlons where you swim for, like, 6 miles and then, you know, you bike for, like, 50 miles and stuff. And I
– Yep.
Silverman. Triathlon here. I guess it was about 5 or 6 years ago. I was in great shape, man. But I was running on a treadmill, and then when I went out and tried to run on the track, I never hurt my knees like that in my life. I could barely walk for like a week, and it wiped me out.
That's intense. Couldn't do it. That's intense. But you know, getting back kind of into the exploration of your investigation, at one point in your career, you actually teamed up with a couple of retired and New York police detectives.
Oh yeah.
And you guys,
my best friend. Yeah. That was my best friend and his dad. And you know, I was the best man at his wedding. He was the best man at my wedding. We were friends from like 12 years old. In fact, we took the New York City police, test together. I don't think he would have become a cop if it wasn't for me.
And,
So we teamed up and then we started doing a employment screening through UPS. We were doing employment screening for UPS for New York and New Jersey and Pennsylvania. It was like 6,000 employment screens a year we were doing for them. My partner was NYPD Harbor Aviation, which is a scuba cop, you know, and they fly helicopters. And in fact, you can see his helicopter flying around the World Trade Center on 9/11. And back in 93, too, he was one of the guys who was rescuing people up when that first bombing at the World Trade Center with the mm-hmm. truck bomb.
Yep.
Yeah, he was
yep.
rescuing people off the roof, which was like a 10-hour operation. They were lowering a basket and taking people off one at a time. So he did that. He was the last guy on the plane where Sully crashed that plane into the harbor. He was the last one to get off that plane.
Wow.
Wow, he's a real hero. He's a real hero.
That's pretty intense.
Oh, yeah. And his dad got a great story. His dad was the guy who arrested Nicky Barnes, the heroin dealer. That's from the movie American Gangster.
Really?
Yeah. His dad, and it's in the papers. It's a famous story because they pulled over Nicky Barnes, and Nicky Barnes was drunk behind the wheel, and he said to him, listen, I forget what it was, $60,000. He says, yeah, I got $60,000 in the trunk of the car. You can have it if you let me go. So, and then they did this whole thing where they told him, well, you know, we already called it in, so we got to get our sergeant to come out here, and then we have to cut him in on the money. Can you take us someplace and where there's more money? And he goes, yeah, I'll take you to this house where there's more money. So he takes him to a house where there's more money. But they go in there and there's drugs and stuff like that. So now they're arresting him for the drugs and the money. They got him on all this stuff. And at one point, they said to him, listen, you know, we can get you off this, but, you know, can you take us someplace where there's like a dead body, where you buried a body or something? And the guy says, that's it. I don't want to talk to him no more.
Well, he already screwed up once, I mean, or twice rather. You know, really why not funny, go all in?
Yeah, when you look up it's in the papers, it's in the newspaper, the bribery case of Nicky Barnes. And when you look it up, I forget what the amount was, $60,000 or $80,000. But I had a guy on my show one time who was Detective Jim Rothstein. He's a mayor now up in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And he's a fascinating guy in his own right. This guy's an incredible guest. And we were talking about this. I told him the story. And he goes, well, you know how much Nicky Barnes used to carry around for bribe money? It was double that.
Oh, jeez. So yeah. You could have got them for more, is what you're saying.
No, they got the other half, is what I'm saying. The other half went missing.
Oh, jeez. No, one of the
70s
things...
New York cops. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
These were, you know, New York cops from the 70s. You know, they had their hand in everything.
Well, these guys actually arrested them, though, and didn't take the money and
for
run.
Bribery, yeah.
So they had ethics.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of money to walk away from. A lesser person would have taken it.
You know, there's a really interesting story, too, with Nicky Barnes when he was in prison. And you hear there's a tape recording of this where he's negotiating with the cops when he first contacts the DA's office or the cops. And he's telling them that he wants to cut a deal. And he tells them, listen, because what happened was he had just hired some guys to shoot a rival. And instead of killing the guy, they went into business with the guy. So he went to the cops and he went to the DA's office and he says, you know, I want to cooperate with you because there's guys out there supposed to be doing stuff for me and they're not doing stuff for me. Right after he made that deal, two white guys went into that same club and killed the guys. You follow?
Wow. Jeez.
Yeah, the theory is that they were cops. Part of the deal he made with the cops to become a rat was to get a couple of cops to kill his enemies.
That's... sick.
Yeah, and you could. I think Giuliani was involved in that too. I'd have to go back and look at it. But
he's a piece of work.
Yeah, you can. Those videos, the tapes are available on YouTube.
You know what my thing with Giuliani that aggravated me about him was, you know, the firefighters in 9/11 that could have made it if they had proper equipment, but Giuliani been fighting them tooth and nail and wouldn't let them upgrade their equipment, so not everybody got to hear the all call to get out.
Yeah,
that always aggravated me that he would like nickel and dime it and then turn around after 9/11 and be like, oh, America's mayor, screw you, America's mayor, where were you when the first responders needed you?
Yeah, and
I used to be an EMT.
the local hearings there, the 9/11 hearings were protested every day, and he was hated by all the firefighters and the cops.
Yeah.
Around that time, yeah. And yeah. I've been dealing with Giuliani since since the 80s. I got involved in the Pizza Connection trial. He was a prosecutor in that, and the commission trial. Both of those trials I was involved in as a private investigator. And so I knew him. He was an arrogant guy, too, back in those days. And then later on, when he was running, what was that?
I think he's a narcissist.
Yeah, he's a real character, man. You know, he announced the divorce of his wife on the news. She hadn't been told. She was in Gracie Mansion, and he went out and had a news conference out in front and said, "I'm divorcing my wife."
Are you shitting me?
No. Well, you want to know something
what
really
kind of a
interesting?
What are you, that guy? I mean, you know.
Now he's a creepy guy, man. You know what? Although in some ways he's very likable too, and very.
I never found anything likable about him. But I was when a Ron Paul girl.
Because he used to hang out down at the Doral, too, with Bo Dietl and those guys. But what happened is, a very interesting story about this. Remember with 9/11, there was also anthrax? They mailed all that anthrax?
In the building, underneath
right.
it, in the foundation.
No. I'm talking about they mailed letters with anthrax
oh,
in it.
Oh, yeah. That was like, every time you turned around, there was a new envelope with white powder in it found. Right.
See, people don't remember the anthrax attack, which was supposedly blamed on Muslims, too. Because there was all stuff in there about praise be Allah and stuff like that. But and then, meanwhile, all the anthrax traces back to the military, great anthrax. Huh. One of those anthrax cases, okay, was to a National Enquirer-type building in Florida. And it was a guy named Robert Stevens who was the first anthrax victim, right? And very interesting is his wife... I don't know if it was someone involved in that. It might have been his wife or someone involved in that building was also the real estate agent for the 9/11 hijackers. Okay. Now,
what?
They closed down that building, this National Enquirer type building. I forget what it was called. And one of the rumors is that they had a picture of George W. Bush when after his college days standing up on a bar urinating. Okay. And I've heard that picture exists. And supposedly it was there in that office building when they sealed it up because of this anthrax. Do you know who bought that office building?
Clinton?
Rudy Giuliani.
Huh.
Because Rudy Giuliani started a special company that could clean up anthrax. and that company went and bought that building, and they got it for a piece of cake, too. They got it for like $40,000. When you see the aerial photos of this building, the air conditioners on top of this building are worth like $150,000. But they got the whole building for like 40 grand.
Because it was considered, you know, such a loss because they'd have to clean up this stuff. Yeah.
And Rudy has the magic handy wipes that can clean that.
Apparently. Apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
He's got magic handy wipes for a lot of things, apparently. Yeah. Now, one of the things you also are involved in, and people can find this out by going to emailrevealer.com, and... In addition to your private investigation, and I found this interesting, you also get involved with non-custodial abductions where children have been abducted, people who are kids who are runaways, deadbeat parents. And you also do a lot of things with reverse lookups and cheaters and things, but you do cyber stalking prevention. And I kind of like to talk about that a little bit because I know we're running up against the clock. And this is important, I think, in 21st century for people to be aware of. And that is identity theft and cyber stalking. And you're the perfect person to talk to. What are people doing wrong? What can they do be right to try and prevent not even just identity theft, but cyber stalking? I mean, women talk about this on Facebook all the time, the bizarre requests that you get.
Oh yeah. See, what happened was, I got involved in the reason why that website is called emailrevealer.com. It says way back in the 90s, I was negotiating the Art Bell lawsuit. Okay, I started getting stalked by his obsessed fans. You know, and so I had their email address, but I couldn't get a name and address for the email. I couldn't identify the person behind this anonymous email address. So I contacted my friends in the PI business and I said, "Hey, how do you get a name for an email address?" And I said, "No one can do it." So I figured out a way to do it, to identify people in their email address. So, and that's how I got involved in cyber stalking intervention, by identifying people and locating them from their email address. And that's how I can locate like lost kids or runaway kids or custodial abductions, because I can email them. If we have their email address that we know they're using, I can email them and see where they are when they're opening the email.
Oh, okay.
That's how I found George Zimmerman. When George Zimmerman, right before he turned himself in, when all the news media was looking for George Zimmerman, he set up a website called The Real George Zimmerman. I figured out what his email address was on that website just by guessing, trial and error, okay? I found it, and I emailed him, and I located him. And wouldn't you know it, I could have made a fortune from that, but he turned himself in the same day. Now, at one time,
Didn't he just get beat up?
What was that?
Didn't he just get beat up for, like, boasting?
Yeah, he's got a ton of problems, this guy. He's always having trouble. At one time, I was doing more with an email address than anybody, I think, in the country. And I would go to these forensic training boot camps and stuff like that. And whenever anything came up about an email, they'd see me in the audience. They'd say, hey, Ed Opperman's here. You know, I'd talk to him about this. They'd stand up and tell us. And I wasn't even prepared or getting paid. I was doing so much with an email address, I came up with a way to trace emails back to online dating websites, okay? If your boyfriend's cheating on you and he's registered on an online dating website, you can give me the email address and I'll trace it back to that website. I can give you back a whole list of all the sites he's on. So, now that's good too, again, with your dating romances and stuff. If you're dating a guy, you meet him on Christian Mingles, and the guy's also on altfetish.com or altbondage.com or altgay.com, you may not want to date that guy, you know? So, or also too, for child custody cases, you know, you give me your ex-husband's email address, we find him on all these porn sites and these bizarre fetish sites. When you produce that report, when you create that report, it's so embarrassing. He doesn't want it shown in open court, everyone flipping through this exhibit with all these pictures of all these different websites he's on. So that they're more likely to settle with you, because they want to save the embarrassment.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can do with an email address. I use it too in asset searches and locating people's assets. A lot of people don't use emails for that either. So I've made my bones with emails. I tell you that. I got my chops on that.
Wow, there's a lot more that you can do with it than I had thought.
Yeah.
Now I know we're getting up against the clock, and I want to make sure we plug the openmemoryreport.com. Go check it out. It has a members-only section, and you're in the middle of a membership drive right now, aren't you?
Yeah, you know what? If you contact me directly at OppermanReport@gmail.com, or you go to OppermanReport.com and just click the Contact Us button, I'll cut you a deal. I'll give you like 13 months for like $70, okay? So you get an extra month, and you save like $5, you know, because we're trying to raise money quickly.
Is that an IPM special?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so IPM Nation special. You go to OppermanReport.com, go to the contact page, you can message there and mention that you heard this show on IPM Nation, and you can get a discount on your membership, or basically get a little bit more time. You get a baker's dozen.
Yeah, and also too, we have a document section, like I said, with all these lawsuits. We also just got our hands on the search warrant, the videotape that they took when they executed the search warrant on Jeffrey Epstein's mansion. And when they're going through his mansion, you can see pictures of Jeffrey Epstein with the Pope, with Castro. You see all this computer equipment. It's really, really fascinating stuff inside the home of this bizarre pedophile who's best friends with Donald Trump and Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was on this guy's plane 24 times, and 4 times he ditched his Secret Service protection. We found out from Gary Byrne, you don't just ditch your Secret Service. You got to fill out a whole form, an affidavit, saying you don't want protection for those days. So it's a big deal.
But he was the president. He's not supposed to ditch Secret Service. Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. For all of this and more things on Jeffrey Epstein and all kinds of crazy stuff that you need to know about and you're not going to hear about it in your local news media, check out OpermanReport.com. Ed, I want to thank you for coming on Liberty Walk with me tonight.
Jen, thank you so much for having me. And I know you saw me promoting my little discount there, and you invited me to come on your show. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hey, your family, your IPM Nation family, of course.
Thank you,
well, thank you very much for joining me. And folks, you can tune in next week to the next episode of Liberty Walk. You never know what you're going to hear here. And definitely check out the Open Report Opperman.com, Opperman, Opperman, report.com, for more in-depth information on some of the stories that we talked about tonight and some other stories we didn't get to, and check out the Opperman Report on IPM Nation on Friday evenings. And I'm Jen Coffey, your host, signing out for this week's Liberty Walk. Stay safe.
And where we're from. Man, we're a flower. It's an every living thing. Mind, use your power. Spirit, use your wings. Freedom. 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 Freedom.
IPMNation.com.